You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
And just like that, folks, you know what? I'm just coming off episode 100 of YWC Football Talk. This is episode 101, and what a better way to kick it off than with some Pat's talk with a good buddy of the show, Pat Lane. How are we doing tonight, Pat?
I'm doing great, Griff. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
No problem. It's always a blast getting to talk to you, getting to talk football on Pat's. I wanted to talk fantasy with you, but I think we'll wait to save that for later because big thing I want us to focus on is this whole Mac-Cam controversy because, like, I've seen people tweet, like, support for both guys, like one guy kind of like you put one guy on a pedestal, you kind of try to bash or bury the other guy. Like I saw First Take today basically saying like, oh, is it a problem that Belichick hasn't announced it because Cam came out and had that little thing in his press conference? But for me, I'm that guy where I'm like, look, I'm going to support both guys no matter what direction they go in, because that's the honest fan thing to do. You shouldn't try to be burying a player on your team unless like they show like, look, they're worth of doing that. I feel like you look for now in camp, support both guys, and no matter what happens, happens.
Right. And that's, I mean, listen, I had an article come out today on Pat's Pulpit, you know, five reasons why Mac Jones should be the starter day one, right? Like, I think that I'm starting to lean towards Mac being the starter making sense. But the thing is that, you know, there's no need for anybody to crap on Cam Newton. Like, there just isn't. The guy has been the consummate pro since the day that he got here. He's done everything that he can for this team. And honestly, he's eaten a whole bunch of crap, and he's done it with a smile on his face. Like, he's heard it from the fans. He's heard it from the media. He's heard it from everyone. And he just keeps doing what he's doing. And the guys in the locker room love him and respond to him. I mean, it's just like, it's not, he's just a good guy. And even the stuff like today, you know, the second practice today, obviously against Philadelphia, and, you know, Mac runs a play at the end of the game, with the end of practice, goal line situation, checks out of a play, checks into a pass play, and throws a touchdown to Asiasi, pumps his fist, and the first thing he does is turn around and celebrate with Cam. Points at Cam like, we've worked on that. Like, him and Mac obviously went through something like that, and then they, like, you know, they jumped up in the air and celebrated in the air together or whatever, right? Like bumped bodies or whatever, bumped side, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Jumped up and
hit him.
So it's like one of those things where it's like he's a great teammate. He's there for everybody. Like, we don't need to shit on him. Now, I think that I've seen him, and I don't know if he's going to bring enough to the table to make the Patriots significantly better. And I feel like for me, the argument for Mac is that I feel like he's going to have growing pains no matter when he starts, right? Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's in 2 years, it doesn't matter when it happens. Live bullets is totally different, right? So when you get out full speed in an NFL game, I'm looking at that saying, okay, I want him to have that behind him essentially. So I want to get those out of the way now, not next year. Like, I want to get him out of the way now so that he's better next year than he is. You know, so it's almost like, I don't know. You're not going to win the Super Bowl with Cam. I don't think. I don't see that happening, even with this defense. So if that's the case, well, then give Mac as much time as you possibly can. So then next year, when hopefully you're even a little bit better, now next year, Mac is that much better than he will be going into next year. So that's kind of, that's the way I kind of look at it. I don't think that there's a huge difference between the two of them. Now, Belichick may see that differently. It seems like he does see that differently. I just feel like, and you know, and Tommy Karin has kind of pointed this out a few times, like, the thing about it is that I thought Mac was going to have to go out and crush Cam. I just feel like he's consistently been the more accurate quarterback, the more consistent quarterback in camp every single day over the course of time. So it's like, you know, it's like a million little paper cuts where it's like he just keeps being better than him. So at a certain point, it's like, well, I don't need to see Cam sucks and Mac is great. Doesn't need to be that. It's just like, well, why are we starting Cam if they're the same? You know, that's kind of where I feel. And I get the running aspect of it. I understand all that, but it's hard. But that's the one thing that I won't tolerate is like, we don't need, and you said it perfectly, like, we don't need to like to shoot Cam down. There's no need to do that. Like, it's unnecessary. Maybe you think Mac is better. That's fine. Maybe you think Cam is past his prime. That's fine. But regardless of what you think, like, Cam's been nothing but a great teammate and a great person since he got here. And nobody can argue that point. So it's like, there's no need to like crap on him. It's unnecessary.
You know, my big thing too is I feel like it's going to be easier. It would be a lot easier for them to put in Mac over Cam instead of putting in Cam if you start with Mac. That's the only thing I feel like, because you're just stunting his development if you start with Mac. That's my only thing. Because look, if Cam goes in by a first few weeks, we're doing like what you and I did in our first ever time you came on here last year, where we're just airing grievances and playing therapist to one another.
Yeah.
It's a little easier if we know, hey, look, Mac's coming in. So you have someone reliable. But at the same time too, I don't want to see Mac coming in and being that reliever because Cam had a bad outing, like what we saw last year with Jared Stidham.
Right.
I know you love Stidham. I know you love Stidham.
No, but listen, I mean, Well, it's funny. Rosen got cut today, and I tweeted out, I'm like, you know, I would have loved to have seen Rosen and Stidham end up in different situations. And, you know, one thing after another with Stidham. Now, there's a good chance that Stidham still would have sucked. But, you know, Spags and I were on Team Stiddy last year.
Oh, yeah.
And big time. And, you know, I mean, it's what's interesting is that if COVID doesn't happen, Stiddy starts for the Patriots last year. Like, because Cam wouldn't have been available. Cam would have signed somewhere else because he would have been able to work out. People would have seen that he was like that he was healthy, and they would have said, okay, we'll bring him in. And then Patriots wouldn't have signed any quarterback and City would have started. And it's just funny how things work out like that. And so but I just see this is the issue with me, right? If you look at the Patriots, so we just look at the Patriots schedule, right?
Yeah.
They play the Dolphins at home,
yes,
at the Jets, they play the Saints at home, then they get the Bucs. Now I think you kind of pencil in the Bucs as a loss there. And then, by the way, then they go to Houston after that. Okay, so let's say I can't imagine Deshaun Watson. I'm just gonna go with the assumption that he's not gonna be allowed to play because it would be disgusting if he was.
Yeah.
So sure, I'm just gonna go with that. Okay. Let's say at worst they should be 2-2 after those first four games. I'm sorry, they should be 3-2 after those first five games at worst. You're 3-2. I don't care how the quarterback's playing. If you're 3-2 and you're going against the Cowboys, then you have the Jets and Chargers. It's like, well, you could easily be 5-2 or 6-2, and Cam could be playing kind of crappy. And still you could be 6-2 because you're not playing great teams and you have a really good defense. But at that point, if you're 6-2 or 5-3, you can't make a change at quarterback. No matter what the quarterback play looks like, you're winning. So it's like it becomes very difficult to make that move. I think if Mac starts off the season as the starting quarterback, Cam's on the team because he's too much of a leader in the clubhouse to me to take that back seat. And I think that has nothing to do with Cam himself. Like, I think he would be willing to accept a role as a backup. I just think there are guys in the locker room that view him as a good player.
Yeah.
And when Mac struggles, because he will as a rookie quarterback or whenever he starts, he's going to struggle at times, right? So yeah. When he struggles, there might be guys in the locker room and say, man, shoot, we should roll with Cam. You don't want that. You don't want that. Have Brian Hoyer be his freaking backup. Like, you don't need Cam behind him, because then the whispers start coming in. Oh, well, what if this guy starts, and what if this guy that, and what if this? You know, like, those are the things you don't need. It worked with Brady and Bledsoe because in 01, because Brady was winning. Like, the proof was there. They were winning with him, you know? So when, by the time Bledsoe came back, it was like, hey, man, we're on a roll with this kid. Like, we can't now switch quarterbacks again. Like, we're all of a sudden on a roll when he's playing pretty well. But if it had been like Bledsoe was out 1 week, they would have put Bledsoe back in. Like, so, you know, that's the hard thing where it's kind of like, you know, I know the Dolphins finished with a decent record last year. I know that, right? They weren't awful, but like, that was still kind of a mess. That transition was still a little bit of a mess. So like, I don't want to end up with that here where it's like Cam stinks and now we got to pull him and it's like this whole thing. So I'd just rather make the decision now and then kind of go from there. And then either we're rolling with Mac or we're going with Cam and we'll do some sort of Kansas City thing where Cam plays the first year, you know, and Mac plays, you know, week 7 or week 18 or whatever the case may be. And then we go from there. I'm just hoping that we don't have the bench Cam halfway through the year is what I'm hoping, if that's the case. Because really, that would be pretty disappointing and a sign that they made the wrong decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also I was thinking about that the other day, the Brady Bledsoe thing. Because when I'm at work sometimes, I don't know why this happens, random football thoughts pop in my head. And I said, I'm like, I don't know why I thought this, but I'm like, what if Drew Bledsoe didn't get blown up by Mo Lewis in that game? Yeah. What if who knows where Tom's career goes from there? It's just things like that that always like fascinate me. And like why I say football for me is a 24/7 sport, also to my mind's a very interesting place. But no, you're right. Because even too, if we say Cam sucks, you put in Mac, and then like, oh, out of nowhere, Mac starts to suck, so you go back to Cam. You don't want that negative cloud hovering right over you, like what the Dolphins have going into this year, where they, you know what, they're probably going to have a competitive football team. Obviously, they got Howard to re-up with them, unlike certain quarterbacks who held out for an egregious amount of money, if you know, you know. But with the whole Mac and Cam situation, it's, I just don't see Belichick doing that where he does like the whole relief pitcher thing. I could only see it if they're getting a game where they're, say, if they're down like 23-6. But besides that, I can't see him doing that because, and for some reason, it's Max Kellerman who loves to point this out, that last year we're two bad plays away from finishing 9-7 as opposed to 7-9. So football is the biggest game of what ifs, and I hate it. I hate it for it. But at the same time, I agree with every single point you made there about the whole quarterback situation, just because, you know, at the end of the day, the carousel is going to continue to roll. It's like the Chicago situation with Dalton and Fields. Right. Obviously, Fields is going to take over, but at that same point, it's going to be that, hey, when's it going to happen? Same thing with San Francisco, too, because the whole Trey Lance, which I heard the announcer say the Trey area, because it's like, oh my God, he had this 80-foot bomb. I'm just like, I want to see him do that in the regular season, though. Yeah. So it's all a matter of time. But look, eventually these quarterbacks in this class are going to get their chances. And the only thing I want to add is I don't want everyone to come out and say quickly that this is going to be the greatest quarterback class of all time, because we still have to pay respect to 1983. I know that's a very outdated reference for myself. And I know that's most of those guys played when you were a child, but even I know that's still the best quarterback class of all time.
No, I mean, it's not even close. It's not even close right now. And look, this quarterback class could be all time for sure. But to beat 83, I mean, you're talking about some of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game were drafted in 83. So, like,
Hall of Famers.
You know, it's hard to, you know, to get Tony Eason, of course. But it's hard. It's hard to get to be like, okay, we played one preseason game, by the way. Like, let's just pump the brakes a little bit here. You know, like, look, I think Mac can be good. I mean, here's the difference for me, right? A guy like Fields and a guy like Lance, it's going to be easier for them to be good right away because they can extend plays. They can move in the pocket. They can run outside. Now all of a sudden guys get open because they have an extra second or two. Mac doesn't have that luxury, right? And my thought was, okay, let him sit a year so he can learn the offense and understand what's going on. I just feel like he has a grasp of what's happening. He's on the field. He's directing guys. He's getting people. There was one moment in practice, and it was subtle, but there's one moment in practice where, like, he's like, all right, let's get in the huddle. And like guys are like kind of walking the huddle. And he's like, get the hell in the huddle. And people are like, all right, when we like that moment, like it's not much, but like he's a rookie quarterback. He's learning, he's figuring things out. And he's not happy that guys are being lackadaisical getting back in the huddle. And he's like, get the hell in the huddle, let's go. And like that's a moment, that's a Brady moment to me. Like that's something that veteran quarterbacks do. You don't see that a lot with rookie quarterbacks. And he has that like swagger that he plays with. But he's also, he gets to the line, he sees something, he checks out of it. He sees this, he understands what's going on. And that stuff that like, I just think he's so far ahead of where I thought he was going to be. He came in and they've thrown everything at him. They've thrown everything at him. They've tried different things. They show him different things. They put him in these uncomfortable situations and he just comes through every single time. And, you know, I was impressed with, and one of the things they wrote about in the article is that, okay, first day of full pads practice, he was brutal. He was terrible. I walked out of that practice and said, he's not ready. He's not ready. He just can't do it. The next 2 days were his two best days of practice. He came back out on Wednesday and he fixed the issues and he was more accurate and he was more on time and he was understanding things. He was reading things. And then Thursday, they're back in full pads and he had a better day than he did on Wednesday. So like he's building off of that adversity. You saw the same thing again that happened today. Yesterday struggled, you know, first practice against the Eagles and he looked okay, but he had a tough day. Comes out today, threw a pick in 7-on-7s and then has 11 straight completions in 11-on-11. So like now he's understanding what's going on, diagnosed things. He's learning as he goes. That's the type of stuff that like, you know, getting through that adversity and learning in challenging moments like that, that's the stuff that you can't teach. That's stuff that like, you know, some guys don't ever get that. And to have a guy that can pick that up as a rookie, I mean, that impressed me. So that's why I'm like, okay, I feel like he could start. Now, will he start? I don't know. And ultimately, if Bill decides to go with Cam, I'm going to root my ass off for Cam because he's going to be my starting quarterback. And I don't care if my take is that Mac would have been a better quarterback. It doesn't matter to me. I want the Patriots to win the Super Bowl this year. I don't care whether Cam Newton's the quarterback or Mac Jones is the quarterback. It doesn't matter. And if someone out there is sitting there saying, I want Mac as a starter, I'm gonna pout about it and bitch about it until they put Mac Jones in. Like, what are you doing? That's stupid. Like, you know, I'm not on talk radio. I'm not obsessed with my take. Right? My take is that I feel like Mac is there. Okay, but so what? If they go with Cam and Cam balls out this year and they do awesome because Cam, you know, brings them to that next level. Great. I was wrong that he should have been the starter. And then I just hope that next year Matt comes in and he dominates. And then it's like, okay, then I was right and they were right. Like, whatever, you know? So it's, but like to root against a player on your team because of a take, it is just, is stupid. And no one should do that. And it's just like, that's what frustrates me because you see that on Twitter, you see that, you know, people talking like that. And it's like, just enough with the nonsense.
Look, I know you're not, your name's not Felger, so we have that. I know I don't listen. That's the reason why I like listening to you guys and stuff like that, because you guys have the honest takes. I feel like with the radio takes, a lot of the times it's just general bias to where you purposely say it to piss people off. Like, I feel like, for example, like we see Skip Bayless do it. We do Colin Cowherd does it. Max Kellerman does it. Mike Greenberg to an extent. But that's just part of my whole non-Mike Green bias. I'm not really a fan of his. But that's just the whole thing. Look, you don't care how you get to a championship. You just want to win. That's the thing. That's what people have to recognize. Look, I know football is a player sport. And also, too, I feel like football is the one sport where the hot takes are the like the craziest, or where, look, it's always overreaction. This is overreaction season right now. I feel like after free agency, that with that weird period between free agency and the draft, after the draft to like mini camps and stuff, and now until the regular season starts, it's just going to be overreactions. Because even say if Mac Jones is a starter week one, goes out there and throws, let's just say 35 for 38, like 400 yards and like three touchdowns and like one rushing, everyone's going to be like, oh, this guy's great. He's going to win. Like, he's going to be like the first ever offensive rookie of the year, first and MVP. It's just that's the thing about football that makes this game so enjoyable. It's just the crazy takes that come along with it. And you and I are just here to look, have a civilized conversation. And at the same time, too, we basically feed off each other and we agree on the same points.
Right. I just think, you know, look, I got no problem with the people that have the hot takes, but like, at least admit it, right? Don't sit there and tell me that that's your opinion, that, you know, that you're being honest about it, right? Yeah. I mean, that's, dude, he had what? Friggin' what's his face?
Wilson over Lawrence.
Kellen Mond, right? Didn't he have Wilson over Lawrence, and then he had Kellen Mond as his third quarterback. And it's like, bro, just stop it. Like, nobody believes that. Nobody believes that you really think Kellen Mond is better than Justin Fields. That's stupid. It's a dumb take. Nobody agreed with that. And guess what? Nobody agreed with it. Like, it just, that's the way it goes. You just look at it and come on, man. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And Mond can make throws great, but like, it's so frustrating. But again, he does it because then we talk about him. You know what I mean? Like, and that's really what it comes down to. And people talk about, like, how do you separate? How do you differentiate yourself? And how do you, and now we're getting into, like, you know, the nitty gritty about media and everything else. It's like, how do you separate yourself? And a lot of people do it by throwing out hot takes like that, because if I say something crazy enough, I'm going to get more clicks and more views, and people are going to talk about me more because I said something ridiculous, and people are like, this guy's an idiot. And it's like, well, yeah, you can discount me, but you're talking about me, so it doesn't really matter, you know? And so, like, that's just, and it happens with every sport, it happens all over the place, but it's like, yeah, okay. Like, yeah, you might think I'm an idiot, but you're talking about me, aren't you? And you know, and that's, it's frustrating, but that's unfortunately the world that we live in.
It's like if we came out here and said that, look, N'Keal Harry's going to have a better season than Tyreek Hill, and I firmly stand on that belief, and that N'Keal's not going to get traded. It's just like one of those things where it's just like, it's like that. But even though with Chris too, and Chris is a guy, actually, I listen to him daily because I like Pro Football Talk, but that's just me. But at the same time too, I don't view it as like hot takes. I feel like he just throws out like a crazy, like it's like he kind of like has a stick of dynamite in his hand. He's just not expecting it to blow up in his face. That's what, because if he's right, he's right. But if he's wrong, he's dead wrong. Because I think it was a couple of years ago where he had Josh Allen as a better quarterback and as his top quarterback in the 2018 draft. I think it was him and Lamar, which I think faced a lot of criticism. So that's why I feel like he always relates to the craziness of his takes, where it's, look, if I'm going to say this one thing right, I'm going to just continue on it to throw crap out there and hope that it sticks to the wall. I know, right. I've said many metaphors, but the one I said now, the crap sticking to the wall thing, I think works a lot better than the stick of dynamite one. That's just me.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, but that's it, right? If you say enough crazy stuff, you're going to be right eventually. I mean, if you rank everything, right, you're going to get one of them right. Yeah. You know, like, you're going to get one of them right. And so it's like, you know, oh, yeah, right, I got that right. I personally still don't believe in Lamar Jackson. I don't trust him.
I don't either.
Now, the thing is that he's a weapon. He's an absolute weapon running the ball. And when the threat of the run is so good, I think that's what helps him in the past. But you know, it's whatever. You know, I think that's a guy that's so hard because it's like, you can't, they're going to have to pay him a ton of money, and they can't let him walk. They're going to have to pay him a ton of money. Like, you have to. But then it's like, well, then you got to keep the rest of the team around him. So it just becomes more difficult. But, you know, but anyway, but we'll see. I mean, look, my thing is this, right? You come back to the Patriots. For me, I don't care who the quarterback is. I feel like the defense, assuming they bring Gilmore in, assuming they get Gilmore back in, which, by the way, timetable for his injury should bring him back about now. I'm hopeful that he's back at practice next week. Now, will he practice, you know, against the Giants? Absolutely not. Will he play against the Giants? Absolutely not. But I'm hoping that he's back at practice with a new contract next week. That's what I'm hoping. There's no reason not to. There's no reason not to. Like, they need to get it done. They need to have him at practice. He needs to be playing every game because, and people talk, you know, people are like, well, they have no depth at outside corner without Gilmore. It's like, well, yeah, Gilmore's like the best freaking player in the league. What the hell are you talking about? Like, he's one of the best cover corners in the league. They don't have a lot of depth behind him because, like, they have a really good number one and a really good number two. You can't afford to have depth behind those two guys because they're both really good. So it's like, you know, yeah, they don't have a ton of outside corner, but they have two excellent outside corners. So if those guys are both healthy and both playing, you have arguably the best combination in football on the outside. And so, like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but it would be inexcusable for Belichick to go out and spend this much money in free agency and kind of reload and then not pay Gilmore. It would be stupid, you know, really dumb for them to not make that move.
he also kind of won an award 2 years ago for being the best defensive player in
the league. Oh, yeah, that too.
Just saying. That's why I wanted to kind of do the like the fun whisper thing for the people viewing on YouTube. But I agree with you. I think, look, he's not going to practice against the Giants, which I still find interesting, the fact that the practices are in Foxborough, yet the game's in East Rutherford. But
yeah, I don't know what – I don't know if it's a – I don't know what it is. I wonder if it's like a – maybe the Jets are holding joint practices at the same time, or maybe the Giants have joint practices at home this week, and so they can't – I don't – I have no clue why they're doing it. I'm not complaining because I'll be able to go, but I have no idea why they're doing it.
I don't know either, but it's just one of those things. But yeah, no, you're right. Cause like they can't neglect the, especially the biggest assets in the defense. Cause even you're right too. It's like, oh, he's the best one, but yeah, he's one of the top, not just corners and second and DBs in the league. He's one of the top defensive players in the league.
Right.
But on the defensive front, I got to bring this up because I've not slow. I thought it was like a slow falling off, but it's a quick falling in love. And that's the guy on the front who's wearing number 9. Cause Jesus Christ, that run defense is going to be so much better this year. For all those holes and exposures that were last year, number 9's got it plugged up. Matthew Judon, man.
Man, he looks like so much fun. And that's it's funny because they signed him and everyone was like, Belichick went out and got a guy that's strictly a pass rusher. And I think we said it on the show, like right when it happened, we're like, I don't think so. Like no chance that he spent that much money on a guy that's just a pass rusher. And now you see it, that he used that explosiveness and his physical tools to be a really good run stuffer too. And so they're gonna be so much improved against the run. You got Judon, Hightower's back. Bentley's had a phenomenal camp.
Yeah.
And again, and listen, Bentley's one of my guys. I freaking love his story. Is unbelievable. He was a 3-year captain at Purdue. Was homeless for a time when he was at Purdue, when he was in high school. I'm sorry, like. Just the story behind him is amazing. And he came in here and last year was asked to do something that he couldn't do. He can't play the Hightower role. He just can't do that. He's just not. That's not who he is. And so now he's not in that role anymore and he's thriving. And by the way, the same thing happened to Kyle Van Noy when everyone thought Kyle Van Noy sucked because Hightower was hurt and Van Noy was in his spot and he couldn't do it. That's not his role. And then Hightower came back and all of a sudden Van Noy went to his spot and it was like, this guy's pretty good, you know, because he's playing in the role that he needs to be playing in. And Bentley's that same way, where he's been much better in pass coverage in camp, but he also, I think the read and react there is there for him. So I like him a lot again, but Judon, man, he brings, and Uche, like they just have so much. They have so many guys up front on the edge. Like it's going to be so much fun to watch these guys go to work. And by the way, Chase Winovich just showed up to practice. So we haven't even seen him out there. So you talk about, you throw on the field, Judon, Uche, Winovich, Hightower all at the same time. And it's like, okay, which guy's blitzing? Who's coming after the quarterback? Where are we going to go? Like, man. And by the way, Ronnie Perkins has looked like a beast too. And so, you know, it's just, it's over and over and over again. And this front seven, man, they're going to have a million guys to throw at it, a ton of depth. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And you're right. I think Judon might be the guy that we all like the most, you know?
You know, and because I remember I was always telling you, I was thinking about getting an Andrews or a Henry jersey. Like, I may have to get it just because the number – I love cool. The single digits, yeah. Like single digit pass rusher jersey number. And even too, I love the fact you brought up Uche because I'm not saying I expect a big year out of him, but I'm expecting him to show improvements from year one because, look, he's going to be in a role that's more comfortable and more suited for him. He's not going to be – fed to the wolves, kind of like we saw with Bentley as well last year.
Yeah.
With Bentley. Yeah. And even too, Winovich coming back, not just the long hair, rocking a full beard, looking like a fucking caveman out there. It's just between that and the offensive line, it's going to be big. And then I want to get into the fantasy point quickly because I don't think people need much explanation to it, but man, go get Damian Harris when you can because he's not a running back you have to get in the first few rounds. He's going to be there later, but he is someone I think you should have on your team. And one other point I want to make to you before we go back to there was the Ramondre Stevens touchdown from Thursday. You know, yep. You said Cam's a great teammate. There was one thing I noticed. I see him running. Who do I see running down the sideline? Is Cam Newton the whole way for that 95-yard score. So just another thing, because Cam, even if he doesn't start, you know what? He's going to be that glue guy.
Right. No, it's true. And that's – look, man, that Stevenson run was so much fun. That was coming towards our end zone. Me and Keegan were Keegan came down and sat with me. Keegan and his girlfriend came down and sat with me because there was a bunch of empty seats there and running right towards us. It's so much fun. And you're right, Cam was there, Damien Harris is right there, but like half the team was in the end zone celebrating, which was pretty cool. But you know, on the fantasy point, Damien Harris, the guy that, listen, if you live in New England and you're playing with a bunch of Patriots fans, he's going to go earlier than you want.
Yeah.
He's not worth a fifth round pick, but he's going in the eighth, ninth round right now. I mean,
I was going to say
right now you can get him as an RB3. And to me, that's an insane value to get a guy like that as your third running back when you've already drafted two stud running backs, two good wide receivers, and maybe even a quarterback or a tight end that you're happy with. Now you're drafting Damien Harris to be a flex guy, right? He's not even starting at a running back spot. So, you know, that the value there, I think, is awesome for him. I love Jonnu and Hunter Henry this year. I like Jonnu better than Hunter Henry in fantasy. I'm trying to trade for him and draft him in every single league I'm in because he's just like, he's so good. Like I'm in the Scott Fish Bowl this year. Yeah. So I'm in the ninth round and it was tight end premium. So, the way it works, half point PPR, and it's also half point per first down, but for tight ends, it's a full point for PPR, full point per reception and a full point for first downs. So I love Jonnu and I'm high on Jonnu. So I was drafting from the three spot, but I had the 10th pick in the ninth round. They did a third round reverse, the whole thing. Anyways, I'm drafting. Yeah, exactly. They did a third round reversal. So the third round it flips. So it becomes like the third round looks like the second round and then you rotate. So it's like I started with the third pick and then I ended up with the 10th pick. So anyways.
Gotcha.
So where I'm at 9-10, drafting at 9-10, the girl's at 9-9. She drafts Jonnu at 9-9. And I was like, devastated because that was my pick. 9-10, I was drafting Jonnu at especially with the tight end premium. I love Jonnu this year. I think he's going to get a ton of work. They're going to throw him. He's going to get carries out of the backfield. They're going to be throwing him a million times. He's going to get a ton of targets this year. And Hunter Henry is going to be kind of that Gronk type tight end where he's going to run a ton of seam routes. He's going to be open in the red zone. Like he's going to get a lot of that work. So I like both of them to finish as you know, tight end ones, top 10 to 12 tight ends this year. But like, you know, the fantasy stuff is interesting because you see, and it's like, I love Jakobi Meyers this year, but it's like, he's a little limited. Like he's not going to catch, he's not going to be Edelman. He's not going to catch 15 ball, you know, 10 balls a game, but like, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Jakobi Meyers finishes the year with 85 catches. Like it really wouldn't surprise me if that happened. So where he's going, right. I mean, he's barely even getting drafted in leagues right now, like where he's going right now. He's a guy that you can stick on your bench that no one ever thinks about, that he can be a spot starter for you in places because he does well, or potentially even a trade, you know, a trade chip if which, you know, wide receiver is going to get hurt. If a wide receiver gets hurt, all of a sudden, hey, I get this guy right here and I can get something back for him. So I like some of those guys, but Harris is the big one. Like you said, like, man, he's just, they're going to feed him. Be careful with Stevenson because I still think he probably gets redshirted this year. There's just too many guys. Like this, you got Harris, you got Sony, you got JJ Taylor, you got James White.
Yeah.
That's four running backs. Like he's the fifth running back on a team that they're gonna run a ton. Don't get me wrong, but like when are you gonna put him out there? Like that's the hard part, is like when does he go out there? And even if he does go out there, how many carries can he really get if you got four guys in front of him? You know, like that's where it becomes difficult for me. So I look at it and think he's probably gonna be treated a little bit like Damien Harris was his rookie year, like James White was his rookie year, like most running backs in New England are outside of Sony Michel, their rookie year, right? So that's what I expect of him, unless Sony gets moved before training camp, which is a possibility, but he's got some juice left in his legs, man. Sony looks so much better since he came back from injury last year. I'd love to see him back on this team because between him and Harris, you got two solid running backs on a team that's going to want to run the ball 500 times. You need that.
No, 100%. You're right. Because look, you have the two running backs that are solid there, but the only way I can see Stevenson really getting in is like in those short yardage situations, you know, kind of like what I've seen Minnesota do in the past with Dalvin Cook and McKenzie Al- Is it Mackenzie Alexander? I'm trying to remember.
No, Alexander Madison.
Alexander Madison. Mackenzie Alexander as a DB. My bad. So, like, you'd see Madison get those short yardage plays, which I know cost Cook, like, in those, because I know Cook would have a lot of games where he goes crazy. But then there's those moments where you want Cook to get the touchdown. He doesn't. Then Madison comes in, gets a touchdown, and then everyone's pissed. I could see Stevenson in that kind of role. But besides that, like, for the red zone carries, but more or less, say, if it's like 3-1 and like you need just that, like, boom, like that, like that bell cow to come in, kind of like what we saw with Blunt Force Trauma. So many time back in the day. But no, I agree with you completely with the Stevenson thing. Cause even too, you're going to have a mix of like Sony and James catching out of the backfield. Who knows where those guys are next year. But like you said, I think more than likely in 22, James does move on, but we said the same thing last year and he's still back. So it's all a big wait and see, but you know what, for those of you who don't expect it, Damian Harris, he's going to be fun to watch. He's short, but the guy can move. He's strong. And also the other thing I love too about this team is the fact that like, they're and because Damian Harris is a good example of this, reposting photos of other guys' Instagrams from the teams onto their story to kind of show those guys exposure too. Kendrick Bourne does it as well, which he could be good for fantasy too, but he's going to be a fan favorite very quickly. He's already a guy that I've already attached myself to, is Kendrick Bourne. I think he's going to have a big year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think him and Myers together are the Edelman replacement. You can't replace Julian Edelman one guy. But you can try to replace him with two guys, and I think that's going to be Myers and Bourne. And like you said, man, he's so much fun to watch. He's a great teammate. All the guys love him. Like you could just see him out there and how much he busts his butt when he's out there. Like, you know, everyone already likes Bourne. And I think, you know, again, is he going to put up huge numbers? No, but he's a guy that's going to be important to the team, I think, moving forward. And so I'm excited. Look, they went from having some of the worst weapons in the NFL last year to having two legitimate tight ends who haven't been able to stay healthy. So we'll see what happens, you know, and listen, I know they've already been dinged up a little bit in camp, right? But what everyone's got to understand is that if this were a regular week, Jonnu and Hunter Henry would be playing on Sunday, right? Like, yeah, they're dinged up, but like they're only not going in because it's preseason and they don't need them to get hurt. You know what I mean? Like that's not, they'd be playing if it was a regular season game. So, yeah, they're a little bit dinged up, but they're fine overall. It's just like, yeah, we don't need to push them too much. So, you know, so we'll see. But you bring in those two guys. You bring in Aguilar, who to me has been the best receiver on the field pretty much every single day he's been out there. I mean, he shows, now he's had some drops, but he shows that he can really play. And then you got Jacoby, you got Bourne, N'Keal Harry, and Keegan. I have going back and forth on this, like, he should have 30 targets tomorrow. Like Thursday night, just throw the ball to him on every single play. Like, why not? Like, because we see it. We see it in practice every freaking day. Every day, all you hear is, oh, one-on-ones. N'Keal Harry's winning every single one-on-one. Well, it's like, well, why aren't we throwing him the freaking ball? Like, if it's man coverage and it's one-on-one, just throw it up and see what happens. Like, it just doesn't make – because and this is the thing for me. And this is what Keegan and I have talked about. Like, it's preseason. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. It doesn't matter. Just freaking throw it up to him and see if you can. Because if he does it consistently enough, then it's like, well, maybe we can rely on him to actually do that. Be like, well, he doesn't have separation. It's like, well, watch his college tape. He didn't have separation in college either. He caught all those passes. Like, this is what he does. He doesn't need separation to be effective. So throw him the ball when he's covered and see what happens. It's just like, it drives me insane. And people, like, what happens is people have decided already and they've said, no, he sucks. So, like, we're done. You know, it's just like, well, he hasn't been given an opportunity. They just don't throw to him. And they're like, well, he's not open. And it's like, okay, fine. Yep. No, that's it. He's not open. It's so frustrating to go back and forth with people about N'Keal because, and look, part of it is he was a first round pick and he was drafted over A.J. Brown and DK Metcalf. Should that have happened? Absolutely not. No sane person would have ever drafted N'Keal Harry over DK Metcalf or A.J. Brown. And yet the Patriots did it. Why did they do it? I have no idea. They screwed up royally. That's definitely true. Like, I will 100% admit that. But he's on the team. Like, at least try to make it work. And Keegan said this on our show last week. You're doing a disservice to not only N'Keal Harry, but your team if you're not throwing the ball. Because you're not showing what he can do. Because at the very least, try to trade him and get something for him. And if he's out there dominating, you know, in the preseason, well, then maybe someone's like, shoot, we could use that. We'll trade you a fifth round pick for him. So you at least get something for him. People have seen nothing from him in a year and a half. So it's like, well, why would I give up anything for this bum? You know, so it's just like you're doing a disservice to your team. You're doing a disservice to him. Just throw him the freaking ball. Drives me insane.
But no, I love your point where it's like, look, I understand it's a preseason, but you get him targets. Look, you got to get him the ball because you just can't go up past him. Oh, yeah, he had a first bad 2 years. And all of a sudden, oh, well, he sucks. We're not going to change our opinion on him. He's got to be an all-pro to get an opinion change on him. There's so many players. It's like one player that I actually had to go back and forth on, which today my opinion of him changed because he shaved. But Travis Kelce, I love when people go, oh, why wasn't he drafted in the first round when in that 2013 draft? He was drafted in the fifth round, I believe. It's because you don't know what they're, especially the tight end position, you don't know what they're going to be. Same thing with George Kittle, too. George Kittle was a fifth round draft pick. They took a flyer on. There was a guy, I always remember this, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan were dead set on a guy in the fourth round. I don't even think he's in the league anymore. I don't even remember his name. Fifth round, they took a chance on George Kittle, and look, George Kittle's one of the best tight ends in the league right now. Right. So that's the thing with it. You got to give these guys chances. You got to give them time to develop. It's even to, like, when you're saying the whole, you just got to get on the ball. Look at last year's Jets game, the final game of the year. Devin Asiasi caught that beautiful floater from Cam. Why? Because you got him the ball, even though that game does kind of irk me because it's like, where was this 2 months ago? Where was this in the middle of November? But you know what? The fact that it showed was just a positive sign going forward, and also a reminder, too, that the Patriots are undefeated in the year 2021. So we're technically 1-0 right now. But that's the whole thing. You're right. You just got to get them the ball. If you don't get them the ball, even though it's preseason, you don't know what you're going to get. Because if they trade him and he ends up balling out, look, Belichick looks like an even bigger idiot than drafting him over A.J. Brown and DK Metcalf. That's just the only thing I want to throw out there. So if you give him chances to succeed, and then eventually, look, you might increase his trade value by a little bit. And at the same time, too, even though you're getting rid of him, you know, look, hey, for sure it didn't work out here, even right. If there you see that room for improvement.
Right. Or you say, you know what? This guy might be good in the goal line. Maybe we'll use that. Like, it just, that's the stuff that drives me nuts. But, you know, it is what it is. By the way, one more guy, wide receiver, Christian Wilkinson. Listen, I told him.
Number 17. You can't
wear 17. What the hell are you doing, man? And he started out camp so well. And he's got the drops. He's been dropping passes he drops multiple passes every single practice. And you just can't have that, man. Like, you just can't have, you can't make the team if you keep dropping passes. Even if you're open, it doesn't matter. That's why Gunner still wasn't a wide receiver, because he can't catch the freaking ball. No, he can't. Turns out to be an all pro returner, which is great. But he can't catch the ball, which is why he's in a receiver yet. And so, like, you know, will they keep Wilkinson? I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe. But, like, man, you know, it's awfully tough to justify when he just can't catch the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Like, look, you basically, football's a sport. You have to sell yourself. Obviously, it's a 53-man team.
Right.
But you, for those bubble players, you've got to give yourself a reason. Hey, why should we keep you? That's all he's got to do. If you can go out there, start making catches, because the more you drop, the more it's got to be a big mental thing where you realize, hey, I keep doing this. They're not going to keep me around. You have to give them a reason to keep you around. Look at, like you're right, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski. I think I remember I saw it a couple days ago where someone said, like, the Patriots will release someone that got picked up by Houston, that they're like, oh, I guess the Patriots are keeping Gunnar Olszewski. And then basically every Patriots fan jumped on it being like, yeah, it worked out pretty well. He's kind of
Keon Grossen.
First team all pro, like, no big deal. Like, I know it's special teams, but still, like, because that's the other thing I got to point out too is I know Edelman, there were some of the Hall of Fame takes that came out, and people were saying, like, oh, I don't know, but I still will say this, that whenever Matthew Slater retires, I will die on that hill of him belonging in Canton. That's easy. Well,
and this is the thing with that, right? The argument against guys like Vince, which is stupid. It's a dumb argument against Vince, but the argument against I know, right? Yeah.
I know it's your tweet. I had to say it.
That tweet blew up today, but you're right. Yeah. Three. I mean, that's the thing. Three career picks as a nose tackle is outlandish. But nevertheless, and like two of them were like he literally dropped into coverage. It wasn't like the ball just got tipped and it landed in his arms. Like, he dropped into coverage and picked the guy off. But
I think the Chargers one was like that.
Oh, so good. Oh, it was like a tip drill. He chipped it himself and then caught it. It was amazing.
Yeah, the 2011
one. And then ran down the field. But, you know, Slater, you know, you can make the argument against Edelman, because he doesn't have the Pro Bowls. He doesn't have the All-Pros, right?
Yeah.
Slater has that. Slater's in the Pro Bowl every freaking year. He's the best special teams player of this era. He is the best. He is Don Beebe, right? And you could argue that he's even better than Don Beebe was. So it's like, he deserves it. Don Beebe deserves it too, but he deserves it. He's that good, you know? And so, like, to me, man, you said it, like, he deserves it. He should be in the Hall of Fame, you know? And so we'll see. And by the way, if it happens, they'd be the first father-son in the Hall of Fame, which would be pretty dope. Although, no way. Yeah. Is Archie in the Hall of Fame? Archie Manning?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You know what? I'm going to pull out my phone. I'm going to – well, I don't have a statistician, but I am Googling that because
somebody
I'm
said,
pretty sure he is, because everyone makes the argument that once Eli's time is up, that he's going to – obviously, Eli has the two Super Bowls, but if you look at his career post those Super Bowls – it's not the best. Two-time Pro Bowler, Saints Ring of Honor, Saints Hall of Fame, SEC Player of the Year, first team All-American, first team All-SEC. His numbers retired by Ole Miss. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's in Atlanta. He's not in he didn't have Andre the Giant knocking on his door. So
yeah. No, well, by the way, Eli deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Two games. It doesn't matter, man. Two games. It's enough. And the rest of his career, he's mediocre at best. But it doesn't matter, dude. Like,
he beat one of the greatest teams, two of the greatest teams in NFL history twice.
Yeah. Not only does he have that, not only does he have those two wins, he has the second most fourth quarter game tying touchdown drives in Super Bowl history. Brady has the most, and he has three.
So painful. You just made my night even worse. Like, the only thing I can think of to make it better was that article that I have to go read on Pulpit about the 28.3 reasons why to watch that Atlanta Falcons special.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you see the wrote that or
I didn't
someone
see
else.
That. Yeah. Freaking burned. It must have been burned. That's so amazing. Probably. I didn't see that.
Yeah, which by the way, first team, I actually have to send props out to the Atlanta Falcons because they're the first team in the NFL 100% fully vaccinated. Which I think the number may drop after cuts and everything are done. But you know what? The fact that they got there shows that, look, it can be done. So hopefully more and more players get it, because you're eventually going to start to realize who is and who isn't by guys who are wearing masks and stuff like that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, which is good. I think it's important. I think it's important that they get it done. You know, like, I think that that's really important. And so kudos to them. For all being vaccinated, and and we'll see. Hopefully it goes more towards that. I mean, you saw Vegas come out and say that you can't go to the games unless you're vaccinated. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. You know, you wanna do that, Gillette? I'm down. I'm down for it. You know, if you wanna say whatever, like, I'm a teacher, so we're talking about going back to school, and it's like, are the kids gonna have to wear masks, the teachers gonna have to wear masks, the whole thing. So it's like, honestly, you want to make sure everyone gets vaccinated? Say it. Hey, you got to be vaccinated to come in. And I got no problem with that. And people aren't going to like it. And people might not, you know, are going to be, oh, whatever, dude. You want to go see the Patriots, get vaccinated. It's easy. That's simple. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not challenging. You want to get it done, get it done. But if you don't care, then, hey, that's fine. You can choose whatever you want to do. But if the NFL, which is a private company, says that you have to be vaccinated to come in, you got to be vaccinated to go in. It's that simple.
Yeah, no. Because they're going to want to do everything they can to, you know what, have all 32 stadiums full for the whole season. They don't want to eventually have, hey, say, for example, SoFi Stadium or Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. That's why I feel like Vegas has to do it. You don't want those stadiums going from full and slowly decreasing in attendance, because we saw it last year where it made a huge difference for a lot of those teams. Where, look at New England, where the only times Patriot fans got to see their team play was in, like, Houston, Miami, and in Kansas City. Those three games were it. Besides that, I can't think of anyone else who allowed for fans to have this. So, yeah, other teams want to hop on board with it, fine, be my guest. Because the only other thing with fantasy that kind of concerns me is drafting players who aren't vaccinated, because you don't know, hey, if they get it, could it potentially kind of sewer your roster in a way where if there's a week you need to get a win – but he tests positive, he's out.
Right.
It kind of puts you in a bit of a bind. So it's one of those my mind things I've always had.
It's hard to know. Yeah, I mean, you don't know who's vaccinated or not, right? So it's like, it's almost like, you know, I don't want to say don't worry about it, but yeah, it's, but that is something that's like, okay, I find out that this guy isn't vaccinated. Like, yeah, if I'm choosing between two players, I might choose the other player because I know that, you know, he's more likely to play on a week-to-week basis just because, you know, even if he doesn't test positive, even if he's just close contact, and it happens on Saturday, well, guess what? You can't play because, you know, you got to wait. So
look at the Denver Broncos situation.
Right, right. So, but yeah, it's tough. I mean, look, you know, people have their own opinions on it and everything else, but if the NFL decides to do that, then they decide to do that. And look, they did that with the coaches. And the Patriots had to fire a coach, and the Vikings had to fire a coach too. And just like, hey, if that's – you can choose to make that decision, but if you choose to make that decision, you got to live with the consequences. And that's the way it goes, you know. And so, you know, if you want to go see a Raiders game and you don't want to get vaccinated, well, you can't go see a Raiders game. If you want to go see him, get vaccinated. It's not that hard, you know. Like, so it just kind of is what it is. And you know, people are going to hate it and people are going to argue about it, but it's like – I don't want to get into the whole argument thing. I'm not even, you know, but it's like, hey, if that's what they decide, then you don't really have a choice, you know?
Exactly. Because even here, like, I know this is not football related, but MLSC, who owns the Leafs and Raptors, announced today saying, look, all of staff, event staff, employees of the building, fans, you either have to have be fully vaccinated and show proof, or you have to show a negative test to get in.
Right.
And also, too, they did the same thing, too, as for like teachers and healthcare workers here, where you either have to be fully vaccinated, or if you aren't, you have to get regularly tested and take a course on basically, I'm pretty sure it's why you have to get vaccinated. But it's one of those things now where it's like, look, everything in the world, it's kind of getting back to a normal, but at the same time too, we can't let our guard down. So eventually if the NFL comes in and says, hey, maybe you have to wear a mask when you're in the concourse or when you're in the washroom or if you're in the team shop, but if you're in your seats, it's kind of not a free for all, but like you can kind of do what you want. The NFL is going to do whatever it can to get all 200 and let's see, adding on another 16. So let me do my math quickly. I believe it'd be 272 games this year. They want to get those all played. Mm-hmm. I don't think they want to get any. They do not want to cancel any of those. And also, too, this year, they want to. They and I want three games on Thanksgiving and not two.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. Right. And that's. I mean, that's the tough part, right? Is like, how do you? And first of all, you can't. You couldn't. I mean, you could say you got to wear it at all times when you're in the stadium, but you can't. Like police people when they're in the seats, you just can't do that. There's nothing you can do about that. Like, but you know, when they're in the concourse, you walk by a screen, hey, put your mask on, whatever, right? Like, the hard part is that people drink when they go there, so then the drinking starts and the masks, you know, slowly kind of come off because you know, whatever. So that's going to be a challenging part if there's a mask mandate, but it is what it is. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you just got to live with it. Whatever they decide is what they decide. And you know, we're taking my kids to a Broadway show in a few months, and they're obviously not vaccinated. They're not old enough to get vaccinated, so they have to show a negative test to get in, right? You have to either show proof of vaccination or a negative test to get in. And so it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you want to come in? Okay, it's fine. You got to get a test and test negative to get in, and it's got to be within like 72 hours or something like that. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, that's fine. You have to do things because we have to protect the other people around us. You get 60,000 people coming to the stadium. We got to protect all 60,000 people, you know? And so people aren't going to like it. They're not going to be happy with it. They're going to get hassled by it, you know, just like waiting to get on a flight. But it's like, hey, we got to do what we got to do, you know? And so, you know, it's just, unfortunately, it kind of is what it is. Right. And that's kind of the way I look at it. And it's like, okay, if you're not happy with it, that's okay. That's all right. You can be upset about it, but there's just nothing you can do about it, you know?
No, 100%, because look, at the end of the day, it's all about not just player health and safety, but it's about the venue's health and safety, because they don't want outbreaks coming from the stadium, no matter where it is, and especially, too, with all the fans traveling. Before we wrap up today, there's actually one other point I wanted to make about the Patriots' schedule that kind of concerns me, and it's not the beginning of the year. It's the stretch from basically Thanksgiving onward, because obviously not even Thanksgiving, but the mid-November, because you have Cleveland, and then Atlanta on a short turnaround week. I know it's Atlanta. I always poke fun at them. They're a bit of a wild card this year because we don't know what to expect. And then you have Tennessee, the Buffalo Monday night game, which I have circled on my calendar, the Colts, the Bills again, and then you kind of the Jags and the Dolphins, we'll see. But it's that stretch from when they play Cleveland to when they play Buffalo the day after Christmas, which I'm looking at the real make or break point for them for the season.
Absolutely. I mean, so you got Browns at home, in Atlanta on Thursday, Tennessee at home, at Buffalo, like you said, Monday night, in Indy, Buffalo at home, and then you finish off with the Jags and the Dolphins. But like, That stretch is brutal. And the thing about the Colts is that, oh, people can say, oh, you know, Carson Wentz stinks. And this, Colts are going to be a good team. They're going to be a good team this year, right? And so the Titans are going to be a good team. The Browns are going to be a good team. The Falcons, we'll see. But, like, they at least are going to have a high-powered offense and a decent team. Colts are a good team, and the Bills are a good team. And you play the Bills twice in that stretch there with the Colts, Titans, and Browns mixed in. I mean, that's five very, very difficult games with, you know, with the Falcons kind of mixed in there. So it is definitely a little concerning for me when you start looking at that, saying like, oh my goodness, that's a rough stretch, right? So, but at the same time, you kind of look at it and say, okay, like, if they can get through that point, if they win four out of those five games or four of those six games, like, that's a great sign for them moving forward. The problem is that this might be a situation where you're elevated a little bit. If Tua struggles a little bit at the beginning of the year, you win that game. Then you play in the Jets. You really got to beat the Jets. Then you play in the Saints. Maybe Jameis is their quarterback. Like, you probably beat the Saints.
Should be a win.
Right. So now you're 3-0, and then Tampa comes in and, like, look, I mean, hey, I think it's possible for them to beat Tampa, especially with Brady coming back and everything, but, like, man, I just don't know how Brady comes into Gillette and loses. I don't know how that's possible. So, like, yeah, you know, if you're looking at that, it's a lot. But they could be 4-1 after their first five games. And then you're talking about the Cowboys, then the Jets, and the Chargers, and then the Panthers. Like, that's 3 out of 4 winnable games again. So now you're talking about you could be 6-2 going into that stretch of six games, and that's a murderer's row. So you could be 6-2, like, all right, feeling good. Then you run into a buzzsaw with those 5 out of 6 games, and you could lose. You could go 0-6 in that stretch, right? And so, like, that's gonna decide the season to me. That decides the whole season, you know. And so, we'll see what happens. But you're totally right. Like, that, regardless of what your record is, like, that's why you have to win those early games, because with that stretch coming through, especially back to back to back to back to back like that, you're going to have to win those early games to give yourself a little bit of a cushion to get into the playoffs, you know?
No, 100%, because, look, it could be 2019 all over again. Obviously, they started off 8-0.
Right.
I think it's Keegan that hated the boogeyman thing, where they had the game against Cleveland, and then after that, Cleveland game was kind of downhill when we went to Baltimore, and then there was obviously a bunch of close games with involving, like, the Bills, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and then from there, and then there was just a few other games, obviously the bad loss against Miami in week 17.
Right.
And then even, I'm sure, I think Cincinnati, they had the game against Cincinnati, which went well. And then there was a couple other games, one of which I think I'm blanking on, but.
Yeah, it was ugly though. It was ugly. Just, that season was ugly.
It wasn't ugly. Oh, the Kansas City game where Nikhil's foot was not out of bounds.
That's right. Yep.
But speaking of Murderer's Row, because there's one that I heard of today and I had to look it up for myself, but the Colts to start off the year versus Seattle, versus Rams, at Titans, at Dolphins, at Ravens, versus Texans, at 49ers, versus Titans. If you want to talk about a murderer's row to open the season, the Indianapolis Colts, like, they're going to be a good team, but you get tested almost immediately.
Well, not just that, but if Sam Ellinger is their starting quarterback week one and they don't have Quentin Nelson, I mean, that's going to be real tough, you know. And they say, oh, those guys are trending to come back, but – man, if you're missing your starting quarterback and like,
impossible
best player in your offense, probably, like, you know, for the first 2 or 3 games, like, that's 0-3 with the type of talent you're playing, right? So
yeah,
that's awfully tough. And I know the Texans are mixed in there, so who knows? But still, like, that's a challenge. And then you get behind the eight ball. Like, there's an extra game now, and an extra playoff spot. So you have, there is definitely, like, some wiggle room there. But still, you know, you lose enough games early on in the season, and they're in a fairly simple division where it's just them and the Titans. It's not really, like, they don't have to worry about the Jags.
It's not uber competitive.
Yeah, they don't. Like, the Jags stink. Like, I know, you know, they have Trevor Lawrence, but it's like, all right, like, they're not good. Like, we know that they're not going to be good, and that's okay. And then you have them, and you have the Titans, and then it's the Texans. And as I said, I'm going to go under the assumption that the NFL does not let that scumbag play, especially now since the FBI might be looking into it. Like, it's a whole thing. So I'm going to just go under the assumption that they're not going to let him play, and then kind of go from there. And if he doesn't play, they're screwed. They're going to be terrible this year. So, so you got to rack up some wins against your divisional opponents just because they stink. But outside of that, they have a fairly tough schedule this year. So it's like, you know, they're going to have some tough games. And especially in the beginning, like you said.
I just also hope, because there's one player on the Colts, and it's Michael Pittman Jr. that I'm high on going into this year. He's a player I expect to take a big second year leap.
Yep.
I basically became a fan of his because of his YouTube content that he does. But for the most part, I see what kind of football player he is, and he's just one of those guys where I'm like, look, I want to see him do well. A guy that's not on my team, like that's all I gotta say. And then with the Titans too, I feel like everyone's kind of overrating them in a way where they expect them to be this amazing team, which I think they will be, but I don't trust their defense. That's just the thing with me with them.
Yeah, no, and I think that's valid, right? I think that's valid. They haven't really necessarily done anything where you're like, oh my god, this guy's great. So, but at the same time, like, I feel like they're a pretty solid team. And so, you know, are they going to win the Super Bowl this year? Like, probably not, but I think they're going to be pretty competitive. And so, you know, so we'll see. I like Tannehill a lot this year. I think he's a good player. You know, Derrick Henry, obviously, is Derrick Henry. Like, he's a monster. So, but it is going to be interesting to kind of see what they do. They pick up Julio, which, if he can stay healthy, I mean, think about it this way. Like, if Julio's getting double teamed, you can't double team A.J. Brown. Now it's like, okay, now what do we do? Like, we're in trouble, you know? So now you got Julio and A.J. Brown with Derrick Henry in the backfield. That's tough.
I have a great fantasy addition for that. Anthony Firkser.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you right now, Anthony Firkser is a player you should be contacting. I also think they got he's on the football team. Never mind. I was going to say Adam Humphries. I thought he was still there, but then Humphries is on Washington. But no, yep. Anthony Firkser is someone that you could look at for those options when Brown, because you could have those moments. If Brown's double teamed, Julio's double teamed, Firkser's going to be there like, hi, everybody. Who's
covering him?
Throw me the ball. Like, you know,
so many linebackers covering him. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And then you just got to get over the flat, and then you're good to go.
Right.
Yeah, but
a lot of guys like that, man. A lot of guys like that, where it's like, you know. By the way, you mentioned Pittman. I love Pittman this year. Like, there's another guy. Like, to me, that's those guys that, like, you know, not that I don't want to get too far on draft strategy, but like, not that you should wait on drafting a wide receiver, but like, I feel like you kind of need to wait on drafting a wide receiver because there's so much depth at wide receiver. And there's not a ton of depth at running back. Like, I look at the top running backs, and I'm like, okay, you know, there are the guys that are there. If you're in the first round, you don't take a running back. Now when it comes back to you in the second round, it's kind of like, well, now you have to take a running back. And, yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be there. Like, there's question marks as to who you're going to be able to get, you know? And so, of course, there are going to be question marks. Like, do you love Zeke? Do you love that guy? Like, I don't know if I love Zeke this year. But, like, do I take Zeke over a guy like A.J. Brown? Absolutely. Like, the problem is, or Tyreek Hill, like, okay, maybe you know, Devontae and Tyreek are, I guess, are your first or your two first round wide receivers, right?
Yeah.
But like, so do you take Tyreek over Zeke? And it's like, well, then if you do, then what do you get when you get back to the second round? Say you're drafting sixth overall in a 12 team league. Now what happens when it comes back to you, right? Now you're like, okay, now I took Tyreek in the first round, but now who's available at running back, right? Like, am I going to get a guy like Aaron Jones? I don't know. Maybe, but maybe not, you know, like, and so that's, so then that becomes the problem where it's like, now you're chasing running backs when there's no depth there, you know? So it's always challenging, but it's almost like you try to draft the running backs first, unless, you know, you're drafting at the end of the first round and it's like, okay, I'm drafting pick 8 and Devontae Adams is still there. It's like, well, that's stupid. Like, of course, you know? So you kind of let the draft fall to you, I guess, but man, going running back early is important because there are guys like Pittman who's going in like the 12th, 13th round that you can draft that no one's really considering is going to be good. And meanwhile, they don't really have another wide. I know they have T.Y. Hilton there still, but like, he's not going to put up big numbers. Like, I think Pittman's going to have a good year. So, you know, we'll see. But I just think that that's a guy you should be targeting late in the draft and you know, kind of go after some of those wide receiver flyers, you know?
Exactly, because even too, like, with them, like, you have him, Pascal could be another option depending on how they use him, and then if he can stay healthy, Paris Campbell's another weapon to look at. But no, there's those guys that you always have to look at later on. Like, I feel like everyone thinks it's the stars you have to draft in fantasy football to win, when in reality, look, you got to build your bench, you got to play the waiver wire. because drafts are never, or excuse me, leagues are never won on draft night. Leagues are won through the waiver wire.
Very true. And also, this here's the other part about it. You don't have to draft sexy guys. You don't have to do it, right? A guy, perfect example is Juju. Juju's the perfect example. People don't like Juju because he's not a number one receiver. He's this, he's that. Oh, he dropped a third, etc. The guy caught 95 passes last year. Caught 95 passes last year. Yeah. Now, you're telling me that guy in a half-point PPR league isn't going to win you some games because you drafted him in the sixth round? I mean, like, if you're getting a wide receiver that's going to catch 99 passes, and he caught like 12 touchdowns last year too, so you're getting a guy that's going to catch another 80 to 90 catches this year and probably catch 8 to 9 touchdowns again this year. Why the hell wouldn't you draft that guy in the sixth round? Like, yeah, he might not be, okay, maybe he doesn't have wide receiver one potential. So what? If he's a wide receiver two for you, like in the sixth, seventh round, that's what you're targeting. Like, that's exactly what you want in that spot, right? So to me, it's like, don't overlook some of those guys that people kind of talk crap about them because they're like, oh, well, he's limited or he's capped and I like Deontay better. And it's fine. Deontay's going in the third, fourth round. Like, you're not going to get him early. I'd rather take Juju in the sixth or seventh round over Deontay in the third or fourth round. That's just me. But that's the way I look at it, because it's like, you know, I think the value of some of those guys drops because people are like, he's not a number one receiver, so like, we don't need him. But he's going to put up a ton of numbers, so it's like, sure, I'll take that guy, you know?
No, exactly. 100%.
Contract year, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, to watch out for. When it's contract year, some guys tend to show up a little bit more because, look, they want to get that bag next March, yep. Which I don't even want to think about that. That is 7 months away. I don't want to think about March. It's August. I know, obviously, kids go back to school in a few weeks, but you know what? When they go back is when football season happens, and right. That's when I told my girlfriend Sundays are for Red Zone and the Patriots, and right. I'll be here with my new Starbucks cup that my girlfriend custom for me. It's got a little Patriots logo right there in the Starbucks. It says Patriots right here instead of Starbucks, and it's got my name on the back. So I'll be
awesome.
But some kind of liquid in here, maybe water, maybe not. But for the most part, no. It was a blast getting to chat with you again, Pat. As we kick off the 100s of the episodes. I can't even believe I'm saying that. What episode? This was my 101st episode. I think one of the first times you were on was in the thing in the 30s or the 40s, and in just over a year, I've just been.
It's great.
Just been grinding. Just been kind of doing my thing. So yep. You know what, guys? Here's to the next 100 episodes.
That's right.
You know what? That is, it's 100% right, like you said. But anyway, it was a blast getting to chat with you, Pat. If you folks want to find him on Twitter, it's at P Lane_Pats, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Or search Pat Lane. I'll have him tagged in the episodes if you want to follow him. But anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening to episode 101 of YWC Football Talk. As the football season is here in just under 3 weeks.
Yep.
We're so close. See, like, we can taste it at this point.
We're there. Hey, listen, there's live football games on TV. So I think it's football season already.
You know what? It's like I heard Trey Wingo say in an interview one time, football season's never in an off season. They're always just in different parts. And right now is they're in the preseason, but they're slowly getting towards the regular season.
Because right.
Two more preseason games, and then the fun begins.
That's right.
All right. Well, anyway, folks, hope you enjoyed episode 101. Enjoy the rest of your day. And whenever time you listen to this, and have a good night.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.